everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore.
On this episode, there's civil war in Israel. This is Judges 12. For those of you who were adults in the early 2000s and lived in the United States, do you remember what it felt like the day after 9/11? The whole country was unified, right? We were all Americans, united against a common enemy. Someone had attacked us, not even the people in New York. I live in Texas, and the people in New York were Americans. Everyone in the country felt the same. Someone had attacked us. Even though nobody did anything to me specifically, I felt attacked because my people were attacked. And it was all coming from an outside force. And all of us were united in that one moment, right? In that one moment, there was no division in our country. It didn't last long before we started dividing by religion and started arguing over governmental policies and such. But in that one moment, we were united. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. This happened in Israel. When they had people coming at them from the outside, they were united. But the second that there was no outside threat, then one of the tribes seemed like he was kind of just looking for a fight. It's like as soon as there wasn't a reason to unite against other people, then he just started fighting against his own people. And today, I feel like that is what is happening to us. We don't feel the outside threat that we felt before, even though I believe there probably is an outside threat for us as a nation. But our bigger threat seems to be coming from within. We're all fighting against one another. We are not unified against a common enemy from the outside. And so everyone within our country is divided and fighting against each other. And whenever the people in Israel did this, their country was weakened. And I believe we also are weakened because of this state that we're in right now of division. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, I want to tell you before we get into the lesson that this previously was part of last week's episode. I was going to do chapter 11 and 12 together because they both do have to do with opening our mouths. Something that happens in today's story is also explaining what it looks like when the Ephraimites open their mouths. And so I had this all under a common theme, but the episode became too long. And I also realized that this had its own set of application for us, its own thing that we can learn from just chapter 12. And I really wanted us to focus on unity and division and what we can do, how we may be able to unify, and also recognizing how others divide us and how when we are divided, we are weak. So that is what we are going to be talking about today. And if we begin talking in this lesson about opening our mouths, you just remember that I was using this lesson as part of last week. So let's go ahead and get started.
The people of Ephraim come out to Jephthah and they say, "Why did you go to war without us?" And then they said, "We will burn your house down on you with fire." So we're basically going to burn your house down with you in it because you went to war without us. Now, if you remember, they did this to Gideon too, the Ephraimites. They went to Gideon and said, "Why did you not ask us to come to war with you?" And so they seem very bent on, you know, just looking for a fight, don't they? And Gideon, thankfully, was able to pacify them by saying, "Hey, I understand, maybe I should have asked you, but I asked you as it got to the end, and you helped bring victory. Look at the people that you captured. Look at the things that you did. You will be named in the victory. Why do you care that you weren't there in the beginning?" And this pacified them with Gideon. But Jephthah has no ability to pacify them. These people are mad and they're threatening to burn his house down before he really even gives any kind of explanation. And so they do ask him, you know, why did you do this? And he says, hey, you knew the struggle that we were having with them. We live on the eastern side of the Jordan. You live on the western side of the Jordan. But they have crossed over. If you remember last week, they had crossed over and even fought with Judah, Benjamin, and Ephraim. And so they had fought with them at one point, and the Ephraimites knew that they were still fighting with the people of Gilead on the eastern side of the Jordan. And he said, you knew what was happening. You didn't come to help us, so we took matters into our own hands. This only makes sense, right? Why? You knew what was going on. You could have come at any point and tried to help us out, but you didn't. And so obviously, this did not change anything because basically he gives no concessions to them. He says, hey, I didn't do anything wrong. And sometimes when you point out to people, hey, I didn't do anything that wrong, they back off. But this time they continue to taunt him and they say, you Gileadites are fugitives of Ephraim among the Ephraimites and among the Manassites. And so the Gileadites are part of the tribe of Manasseh. And so he said, you are fugitives, you are rogue citizens of Ephraim and Manasseh. And remember, both of those were brothers. They were both sons of Joseph. And so they were saying either that they, you know, went out on their own away from their brothers and fought this war, or more than likely, they're talking about them going rogue, being fugitives, and taking land on the eastern side of the Jordan instead of land on the western side of the Jordan with the rest of them. Because this tribe of Machir, which was Manasseh's child, this is the only people, the Gileadites, are the only ones of Manasseh and Ephraim who said, when they found out Reuben and Gad were getting land on the eastern side of the Jordan, they said, can we get land also? Well, all of Reuben and all of Gad got land on the eastern side of the Jordan, but only this one clan of the people of Manasseh and of all of the people of Joseph's family chose to take land on the eastern side of the Jordan. And so basically they're saying to them, you know, you don't even belong to us anyway. Like, you are a rogue group that never wanted to be a part of us in the first place, and you just proved how you don't want to be a part of us by taking it onto your own hands and fighting these people without, you know, asking your brothers. And so you do this all the time. You don't want to live here with us. You want your own piece of land. Now you want to fight your own fight. You don't have any sort of unity. And the Gileadites are like, hey, we're just living here. We didn't make that decision. And you didn't come to help us. So you think we're not part of the family, or you would have come to help us. And so we're really not going to stand for this. Basically, he says, you know, those are fighting words. Because you said those things to me, we're going to come out and fight against you, our own brothers. So this is the first account of a civil war with the Israelites that we have seen. They're fighting with one another instead of against another enemy. So they go out, it says, to fight with them. And when the Ephraimites try to escape, it says they take over the crossings to the Jordan River, so that when the Ephraimites are trying to get back onto the western side on their own land, they take low water crossings where everybody would go across. They take this over, the Gileadites do. And as people are passing through, they're checking to see if they are from the tribe of Ephraim or not, because anyone that is from the tribe of Ephraim, they're not going to allow to pass, but presumably they're not going to know exactly who is from the tribe of Ephraim and who is not. And the Ephraimites are not going to say, yeah, we're from the tribe of Ephraim, because they know they're going to get killed. So they're trying to pass as someone else, just trying to go through. And very interestingly, the people from Gilead and the people from Ephraim have a different dialect, a different way of saying words. And so they gave them a test of a specific word to say, and it's like, you know, the magic word that gets you through without getting killed, right? And so this word was Shibboleth. Obviously, I, as an American, am also not pronouncing this word correctly, but the gist of it is that they told them to say Shibboleth, and then they would say Shibboleth without the sh. So it wasn't sh, it was just s. That's how they pronounced their word, however they would pronounce s or however they would pronounce sh, okay? And the people from Ephraim don't know how to say the word correctly. And so when they would say, okay, you want to pass, you know, say the magic word and we'll let you through. And when they said the word, then when they opened their mouth, it gave them away. And they would know, no, they're from Ephraim. And, or they're not, you know, and then they would let them pass. And it says that they killed 42,000 of these people that day, because all of these 42,000 people were from the tribe of Ephraim. And then it says that Jephthah lived another 6 years and judged the people. Now, I'm going to continue with the last three judges because they just mentioned three more judges at the end of this chapter. And then we're going to go back and talk about the Civil War part of this, and then all the way to us of how we need to, you know, conduct ourselves when we open our mouths. So chapter 12 goes on to say that after Jephthah dies, that Ibzan of Bethlehem judged Israel. Now there were two Bethlehems. One was in the south and the other one was in Zebulun. And this is the one in Zebulun because Ibzan was from the tribe of Zebulun. And so it says that he judged Israel after Jephthah, and he had 30 sons, and he gave away 30 daughters in marriage and brought in 30 daughters from elsewhere for his sons. So he intermarried with other tribes, which is not something that he was supposed to do. And so this was an identifying marker. It's like, this guy was the judge. And remember, he's the one that, you know, didn't do the thing that God wanted him to do, but God did allow him to judge the people. And he judged them for 7 years. And then he died and was buried in his land in Bethlehem of Zebulun. After him, Elon, another person from Zebulun, judged Israel for 10 years. He died and was buried in his land in Zebulun. After him, Abdon, son of Hillel, the Perathonite, judged Israel. It says that he had 40 sons and 30 grandsons, and they all had 70 young donkeys, and he judged for 8 years. And then died and was buried in Parathon, which was his hometown in the land of Ephraim, in the mountains of the Amalekites. Now, I do want to say that some say that him having 70 donkeys is like a euphemism for saying cities. And so it could mean that he owned a lot of land and that they had each had cities of their own. Either way, he was a wealthy man who had lots of children and presumably lots of land anyway because of that. And so that wraps up chapter 12. We talked about, you know, the Civil War and then these last three judges. I want to go back to the Civil War thing for a little bit because it says that the tribe of Ephraim never really got, you know, had any real significant role in Israel after this battle. And, you know, most likely this is because, you know, so many people died in their war with each other. But I wanted to just say just for a moment that this is a sad situation when you're not uniting together to fight a common foreign enemy, but instead you are fighting one another. Because when you fight one another, you are weak. When you band together and fight a foreign adversary, then you are strong. And we've seen this so much in nations where if, you know, someone attacks their nation from the outside, everyone bands together and they fight the common enemy. And this brings lots of unity and strength to the nation. But whenever there's not a common enemy on the outside to fight, then a lot of times we get like the Ephraimites just looking for a fight, and we end up fighting against ourselves. And when we fight against ourselves, then we're all divided. We're not unified. And when we're not unified, then what happens? We're weakened. And that's what it says, that the tribe of Ephraim was weakened. And so, you know, I just was realizing that this happened to us in the United States with 9/11. Whenever we had foreign adversaries attacking our country, everyone was saying, you know, I am an American. Doesn't matter whatever is, you know, our other thoughts and ideologies and political parties and all of those things. None of those things matter right now, because together we are going to defeat this outside force. So we were all united in this, you know, common goal of fighting the enemy during that time. And we were not fighting amongst ourselves. No one cared about anything really other than our safety at the moment and making sure that all Americans were safe. But once that outside force went away, then we began fighting one another. And you know, this has become a tactic of our enemies to cause division from within, because they know that this weakens us. And so I would say that all of us need to just be aware of this and try to do our part to stay unified with the people in our community, with the people in our state, with the people in our country, because we all do have common things that we all want and agree on. And if we can get back to that place, we may dispute as to how to deal with those things. But if we could at least just look and see, where do we have common ground? So I'm going to read you a couple of verses on that, and then we'll talk about the words that come out of our mouths. This is Psalm 133:1. And it says, "Behold, how good and pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity." And then 1 Corinthians 12:12 through 26 says, "As the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. By one Spirit we're all baptized into one body, whether Jew or Greek, slave or free, and we've all been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. If the foot were to say, 'Because I'm not a hand, I am not of the body,' is it therefore not of the body? Or if an ear should say, 'Because I'm not an eye, I'm not of the body,' is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body was an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole body were hearing, where would the smelling be? God has set each member in the body just as he pleased. If they are all one member, where would the body be? But now, indeed, there are many members and one body. The eye can't say to the hand, 'I don't need you,' nor can the head say to the feet, 'I don't need you.' No, rather those members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. Those members of the body that we might think less honorable, on these we bestow the greatest honor. And on our unpresentable parts have greater modesty, but our presentable parts have no need. But God composed the body, having given greater honor to the part that lacks it, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all members rejoice with it." And so what he's trying to say here is that we need all kinds of people. This is what a real diverse nation looks like. Right now, they're trying to use diversity to divide people, to say, you know, I want this race or this culture to have this kind of privilege or this kind of you know, this person's been oppressed and this person has not been oppressed, and these concessions need to be made for all these different groups of people. But God says, no, that's not how you use diversity. How you use diversity is you say, oh, from that culture, that's a great thing. Let's bring it into the whole and let's all use that to benefit all of us, instead of benefiting that one person because we say, oh, that thing about your culture or whatever it is about you that is so great, we're going to build that up and make that thing wonderful at the detriment of others, which is what the oppression and oppressor thing does. No, we're going to build that up to help all of us to be one strong, great bit of people. And so that is how diversity can be our strength, is by pulling in all of our talents and gifts and ideas and, you know, ways of doing things and all of that, pulling all of those in and saying, oh, I like that about what you do. And I like that about what you do. And you're good at this and you're good at this. And we need to bring all of these things together and make one really good community, one really good state, one really good country. That is how we should use diversity. That's what God's saying. You can't say that you don't need any one person, because every person is important, and you can't put any more importance on one person than the other, because you need everyone. And so this is how we can try to unify people within our communities and within our churches. And then in Ephesians 4, 1 through 16, it says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long suffering, bear with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. So if we are lowly and gentle and, you know, bear with each other in love, then we will have peace. We will have unity. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, through all, and in all. But to each one of us, grace was given according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, he says, when he ascended on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts to men. And then skip down to 11. He himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. And he did this for the equipping of the saints, the work of the ministry, and the edifying of the body, the whole of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about by the wind of every doctrine, by the trickery of men in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. But with speaking the truth in love, we may grow up in all things in him who is the head, which is Christ, from whom the body, joined and knitted together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causing growth to the body for the edifying of itself in love. Now, do you notice when he says we should no longer be children, being tossed to and fro by every doctrine, trickery of men, cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting? That happens when we are weak. So if we're not unified, if we are weak in our, in our body, then we can easily be attacked with deception. Then people will easily be able to deceive us. And so if we stay unified, no one can break through to that. But once we're all fractured, then it's easy for lies to penetrate and for the truth to not prevail. And so he says, don't be those children tossed to and fro, you know, here and there and here and there. That is what happens when people are divided. They go all different directions. But if you're unified, then you're not tossed about, then you're strong. And he says, that is what I need you to be. I need you to be unified and strong so that nothing can break you apart. Because when they break you apart, then you are weak. And then it starts picking people apart. It starts pulling someone in this direction and someone in a different direction. And then the word of God is completely tainted. And his body is dismembered. And this is not something that we want. And so this is just what I was noticing whenever I saw how the Israelites are fighting against themselves, that they're weakened. And this makes their nation weak. And this is not something that we want. And so we should try to do everything we can to be lowly in spirit and gentle and build each other up in love and unify each other and use other people for the good that they have to offer the whole group, not dividing people into different groups that separate, but bringing everyone together. Do what edifies the whole instead of, you know, building one up and tearing another down. This will never bring unity. It will never bring peace.
So that's all we have for today. Make sure that you go and read this blog post that goes along with this lesson, because we talk more about how diversity can be our strength, what the Bible says about that, and how the world is trying to divide us into separate groups and pit us against one another, and what we can do to make sure that we stay unified and strong. So you can find that blog post for free at both livethroughjesus.com and also on the Substack, livethroughjesus.substack.com. Also, if you want this written lesson, I would love for y'all to join me in Bible study on Substack if that's something that you feel like you can do. I understand that the subscriptions get to be a lot, and so if that's not something you can do, I totally understand, but if you buy Bible studies and go through them with your Bible study groups at church or your girlfriends or whatever, I would love for you to consider subscribing to my Substack and getting these lessons and doing them with friends or just doing them alone. It's $6 a month or $60 a year, and you'll get everything before this that I have put on from Deuteronomy, Joshua, and Judges. So you can do multiple Bible studies and you can just continue on studying with me each week. So that's an option for you. Also, next week, we're going to be talking about Samson, and probably in the next couple of weeks. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss that episode, and I'll see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day. Thank you.